You are listening to the City Dogs podcast with your host, Kimberly Freeman from City Dog Expert. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the City Dogs podcast with your host, Kimberly Freeman from City Dog Expert. So today's episode is kind of, I don't know, it's coming out at a time where the world's in crisis. Coronavirus, COVID-19 is basically on every continent on the planet apart from Antarctica. And a lot of people are getting sick and a lot of people are dying and there is a lot of misinformation out there. So I felt it was very important to clear up a few things. Now, at the time of recording this, all information was absolutely correct. And I went through with our special guest, Rory the Vet, about what we should be careful of. Are there any risks of catching this from our dogs or passing it on to our dogs, that kind of thing. And hopefully his answer to some of the questions will put you guys at ease. Also, we talk a little bit about the travel scheme once Brexit starts, getting dogs in and out of the UK, whether they be rescue dogs or our pets, and the process that's most likely going to happen with that. And then lastly, we have the world exclusive of Rory's book. So hopefully you'll be interested in getting a copy of that when it comes out. It sounds absolutely incredible. I'm really looking forward to it. So without further ado, please welcome another episode of City Dogs Podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of City Dogs. And for the first time in the podcast history, we have someone revisiting. Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Hello, team. It's Rory the Vet, otherwise known as Rory Cowlam. I wasn't actually christened Rory the Vet. And I'm back for a second one. I don't know why Kimberly's re-invited me, but clearly you didn't go that badly last time.
No, Rory's podcast was the most popular podcast episode so far. So there were a lot of questions from you guys that you wanted. You're like, oh, we need Rory back. We need to get these questions and answers. So I've bribed him with some coffee and plants.
And plants, and, which are my new thing.
I know the way to his heart.
You do.
So I was like, here, come to my house. We're going to sit in my spare room, record an episode, and here are some plants. And now he's fine. He's mine now, basically.
Absolutely. Smile on my face, coffee in hand. I'll be here all afternoon.
So Rory, you don't need to introduce yourself to the same extent you did last time, but for anyone that missed the last episode with you, which by the way you should download right now, please can you give a little brief intro as to what you do?
Nice plug there. So I'm a qualified vet. I work in South London at the Neighbourhood Vet, which if you don't use, you should.
It's a good vet.
I qualified in 2015 from the Royal Veterinary College, and I've been working in South London ever since. I do a little bit of media work, so I do some children's television on the Pets Factor. I'm the Blue Peter Vet. I've done Lorraine this morning, da da da, all that stuff. And I have recently written a book.
A book, you tell me. Is this an exclusive now?
It is exclusive.
Oh, wow.
We're talking in the future here, because actually in reality, for everyone listening, the book has not been announced yet.
So we're getting an exclusive, which you're all going to know about by the time this comes out.
Exactly.
But in this exact moment in time, this is a world exclusive.
It feels quite naughty.
I know.
But
I know.
It's happened, but and it I feels can't take right. it back. It does feel right. It does feel right.
I mean, where else would you give an exclusive other than the
front room of your house?
No, exactly.
Right, exactly. It feels so just comfortable.
With a Frenchie wailing in the background. Foster dog has peed on the bed already. It's going really well, guys. It's going well. I'm like, Rory, welcome to my home. So, the book. Tell me about the book.
The book is, for anyone that read This Is Going to Hurt by Adam Kay, it's my version of that, telling my story about being a vet and becoming a vet.
Oh, wow.
So it's a bit of an inside scoop as to the hidden world of being a vet, what's behind that consult room, and also the emotional toll of the profession. The thing I really wanted in the book, as much as I wanted it to be an easy read and a sort of a high, low, funny, gross, all the lovely parts of owning a dog or a cat, I also wanted to hit a little bit of a serious undertone in the mental health aspect.
I love that.
And I've got that as a running theme through that. And hopefully I've addressed that in a way that will appeal to people.
Brilliant, brilliant. Are we talking about the human mental health?
Absolutely. So we're talking about really veterinary mental health.
Yeah.
Because if you may not be aware, but vets top the leaderboard for suicide figures every single year.
Oh, wow.
And we are four times more likely than the general public to commit suicide.
Gosh.
Now, I think there's a number of reasons behind that, and we won't bore you with those, but...
Get the book, guys.
Yeah. But there's also a huge depression and stress aspect to the profession. And there's people dropping out of the profession that are brilliant vets, just due to pressure and due to stress, which just isn't okay.
Yep.
So hopefully it's my way of just educating the wider public about it, so that when you guys go into your vets, you see the human behind the vet's facade.
I think that's very important. You know, doctors have a very similar thing. You know, we're very much removed from seeing this person as another human. We're like, right, you're going to fix my dog, you're going to do this, etc., etc., etc. And that is a lot of pressure.
Yeah, absolutely.
On you.
It's almost machine-like. And
yeah.
And the thing about doctors is they're actually quite protected. You can't call your GP and ask to speak to your GP.
That's true.
That you just get a no, a blanket no. If you wanted to speak to them, you have to go and book an appointment and go and see them.
Yeah.
With a vet, you call your vet, you ask for a call back, you could probably speak to them that afternoon. The amount of people that call me and say, oh, can I speak to Rory?
Yeah.
And then if I don't call them that afternoon, they're a bit annoyed at me the next day.
Right.
I'm going, whoa. I'm not a sort of beck and call service.
Absolutely.
But people expect that.
Yeah. Well, also on social media as well, you probably get hundreds, if not thousands of, my dog's doing this, my dog's doing that. And that's a lot of pressure.
Huge amount. And yeah, there's every vet out there who's on social will have experienced it.
You get
messages again and again and again and again from people asking about, for free vet advice.
Yeah.
And we all want to give it, don't get me wrong.
Of course.
I'd love to give it, but we get in trouble for it. So if you have ever been that person that's asked, don't feel bad against that person. It's not because they didn't want to help you. It's because we will genuinely get in trouble with the RCVS, who are the governing body, for giving that advice without seeing you.
Yeah. And I think also there's the pressure. You have that emotion because this is someone that's coming in with sometimes what they think is their child. You know, they have that connection to that particular animal. And we've all seen in the doctor's surgeries people freaking out because their kids are ill. It's exactly the same for you every single day. Every single patient, this is basically their baby. That
100%.
They're coming in and they're like, here, fix it. Make it okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Working at the extremes of emotion at all times, pretty much.
Yeah.
Whether it be sort of someone in with their new puppy, they're super excited and they're expecting that excitement to be reflected in you. And then 15 minutes later, you could then be putting to sleep an 18-year-old dog with an 87-year-old owner.
Yeah.
And sharing the life story of that dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then 15 minutes later, you have to go back and deal with an emergency. And so you get these absolute snippets of extremes of emotion every 15 hours. It's an absolute toll on you.
Yeah.
You get to the end of the day and you feel exhausted sometimes. I mean, obviously, it's a very lovely job. And I love the profession and I love my job. But it isn't half tiring sometimes.
Right. I mean, with doctors, they're constantly encouraged to check in with colleagues. A lot of the practices, especially in big cities, there's 10, 12 other doctors. You can go and chat to them, refer to them. With vets, you have maybe one or two other people that you can offload onto. Is that another thing that's a problem in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I have recently, I've been working in a branch on my own as the only vet in there with one nurse and one receptionist. And I find that very, very tricky because you don't have those people that you can offload on.
Yeah.
I will be working in the hospital, which is going to have always three or four vets there. So you have that support, you have that emotional support there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very lucky to work with an amazing team of vets and an amazing team of nurses who are always looking out for each other. And we're a very aware aware staff team.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's always asking each other, are you okay? How was that? Are you feeling okay after that horrendous put to sleep you just did? And everyone looks out for each other, which is lovely. But there are practices around the country that just don't get that.
Hmm. And also, you're expected to do everything. We go into our GP, they then refer us to a specialist or a surgeon or a psychiatrist or whatever it happens to be. You have to do all of it.
Yeah, we do the whole lot. We're a dentist, we're a GP, we're the radiologist, we're the surgeon, we're the medic. And you've got to think about the human as well. We're probably the psychiatrist for the owner. We are a shoulder to cry on. We are their best friend.
Yeah.
There was a recent really interesting article in, I think it was The Telegraph or The Guardian, and they did basically a study of a poll to the general public of who, what profession they trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And vets came out right at the top of that poll.
Oh, wow.
And people would trust their vet more than they trust their GP.
Actually, I trust my vet more than my GP.
Which is hilarious, right? And that just gives you a bit of an idea as to the level of relationship mm-hmm. often people have with their vets.
Yeah. Or how good my vet is. Shout out to Anna.
Absolutely. Anna is a hero.
Anna's amazing. Rory knows Anna as well, so... right, we're not just going to be plugging the book.
We're not.
World exclusive, guys. We're actually going to be addressing some of the questions, concerns, and worries that a lot of people have now with Brexit and pet travel
yep.
around Europe. So, I know nothing now. I am basically learning through you because everything has changed so much. Guys, if you can hear wailing in the background, that is a Frenchie in the other room. I promise you, no animals are being tortured. Hopefully, all you Frenchie listeners out there are quite aware of what this particular sound is, but I have a foster Frenchie, and it sounds like children are drowning in mm-hmm. the next room. There is a vet in my house currently. Yes, I was
I've checked. There is no child in the other room. Don't worry. I poked my head in.
He's like, I just want to check all the animals are okay. And I'm like, they're fine. It's a Frenchie, Rory. But back to the serious Brexit pet travel questions. What's happening? Do we know?
We do and we don't. That's okay. The thing. So as of the 31st of January this year, we got a bit more of an idea.
Okay.
So the one thing I can tell you 100% is nothing is going to change until the 1st of January 2021.
Okay.
Okay, so until that point, you can travel on your passport that you already have, or you can get a new passport issued. There's nothing wrong with British vets currently issuing EU passports because technically we are still allowed all the way through 2020.
What is the current process for anyone listening for the next few months?
The current process is you go to your vet, you book an appointment, you have a health check, you have a microchip checked in your dog, which you should already have placed if your dog is over 8 weeks of age. It's if you don't,
legal requirement in the UK.
Exactly. If you don't, go and get it done because you'll avoid a fine from the police. and it's also responsible. So you have to have your dog microchipped. And then as long as that's the case, you check the chip and then you give a rabies vaccination. Now, it's a dead vaccination. It does not have any risk of giving your dog rabies. So don't worry about that. And then really, 21 days later, you can travel. It's as simple as that. The only other rule with pet passport and pet travel at the moment is within 5 days of returning to the UK, but more than 24 hours before, you have to get your dog wormed.
Okay.
Okay. And you have to go to a vet, whether mm-hmm. that be in France or Spain or wherever you are, go to a vet. You have to get the wormer given by the vet.
Yeah.
And they have to stamp, sign, date and time your passport.
Okay.
And then you have a 24-hour waiting period, and then you get 4 days to come back into the country.
Right.
Okay.
And that is going to be the case up until the end of 2020.
That is the case till the end of 2020.
And then.
It might stay the same.
Okay.
It might stay the same, and I think everyone should be hoping for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've got to be realistic, and with current negotiations, it doesn't seem like it's going to be that easy.
Okay.
It is a little bit too good to be true. So what we've got to prepare for is becoming what's called a third country.
Okay.
Okay, so we're currently a member state of the EU. As soon as we're not, we can then be categorised as a third country. And essentially that means we have to follow the same rules as any other non-EU member state. So what you have to do is the nice little blue passports that we've had for years go in the bin.
Ugh.
They now become a thing of the past.
Recycle them.
Yes.
They're
laminated, so maybe not.
Damn.
Or just frame it or something.
Frame it.
Just frame it as a memento.
That time we were in the EU.
Yeah, just look back and be like, oh, those are good days.
The time our pets were EU citizens.
So, it's very likely they will become a thing of the past. And then with the big rule is going to be, we're going to have to start doing titer testing, which essentially means taking a blood test to prove that the vaccination has taken and formed antibodies.
Okay.
That is essentially what the rule is going to become in. Now, that test, there's a slight pitfall.
Oh.
Because the longer you leave the test after giving a rabies vaccination to your dog, the more likely your dog is to fail it.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what your vets are charging, but we are currently charging somewhere around £170 for that blood test.
Oof.
So, if you vaccinated your dog, say, a year ago, and you do that blood test and you've got a relatively high chance of failing the blood test, I would probably recommend going and getting another rabies vaccination given,
mm-hmm.
waiting 30 days,
mm-hmm.
and then getting the blood test taken.
Okay.
Because that will almost guarantee you're positive. It can't 100% guarantee, but it's much more likely then to cause a positive reaction and then a positive antibody titer when you then take it within 30 to 60 days.
Okay.
Okay. And it saves you forking out 170 quid twice.
So will how long will the rabies injection last for?
So the rabies injection lasts for 3 years, depending okay. on where you're getting it. The ones we give, and they're made by MSD, they are 3 years, so they're Nobivac and Canagen. The other brands are sometimes 1 year.
Right.
So Rabicin, for example, is 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, once you've taken the blood test and you've got a positive titer,
mm-hmm.
you then have a 3 month wait.
Before you can come back into the UK?
Before you can travel.
Oh.
Before you can leave into the EU.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's going to basically take it from a 21-day process to a 4 month process.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's going to be a pain. Now, what I would suggest is if you travel a lot,
yep.
do that in preparation this summer.
That makes sense.
Because there's just not, it's not, for the sake of a couple of hundred quid, go and get it done. That way you're not going to worry about traveling next year. Equally, if you want to wait, just don't plan to travel before April.
So August time is when people need to start thinking about, well, if you start saving now, think about getting your dog the rabies injection. September, you'd want to do the test, and then you'll be fine to travel in January.
Right, exactly. Okay. Yeah, if you really need to travel in January, then you can do that.
Right.
What I would probably recommend most people is if you want to risk it or not 100% sure, and mm-hmm. you don't have to travel in January to April, don't.
Yeah.
And then put it back for the year, and then you can work out exactly what you need to do, because otherwise you might, there's a small chance you might be wasting a couple of hundred quid, because
right.
they might turn around and say, oh, your passport's fine.
Okay.
But yeah, we don't know.
Gosh, what
yeah.
drama.
And then the other thing is...
Oh, boy.
Yeah. No, it's okay. This okay. one's easy to do. You just have to be organised. Once you've got your rabies titer test positive titer, you have to keep your rabies vaccination up to date. If your rabies vaccination lapses by even a day, you have to do the whole process again, which just is a complete ball ache.
Yeah, I had to do that bringing the dogs into the UK. From the US, well, actually from New York to Paris, we had to go through all of that. I had to plan ahead, get the rabies injections done, get the titer test done. The additional pain was then you had to go to the airport to get them to sign off that they've received all the they've received all the vet certificates and everything's kosher, basically. Then you had to fly within 24 hours. It was an absolute disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, traveling around the country, around the world, to sort of Oz and the US
yeah.
is a pain.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's all have our fingers crossed that everything's fine.
Yeah, I mean, hey, look, once it becomes a thing, the other thing I suppose I'm slightly optimistic about
mm-hmm.
would be if we suddenly have to start doing that again,
yep.
the lab fees are going to have to reduce in cost.
Yeah, that's true.
The more labs will start doing the tests, therefore competition will drive the costs down,
mm-hmm.
therefore the vets will not charge as much. So I think... over time, if that does come in,
mm-hmm.
it won't always cost 170 quid to go and get that titer
okay.
done. It will probably start to be much, much more reasonable.
That's the old system we used to have, I think, before the pet passport.
It absolutely is, yeah. It absolutely is.
Gosh, so we've gone back in time.
Yeah, and then they might introduce things like tick treatments again, but we
oh.
don't know yet.
Interesting. And when are you going to find out more information, or is it just wait and see?
It's wait and see from DEFRA and the APHA, unfortunately.
Right.
What I would suggest is if you are worried about this and you are having to travel sort of early next year, contact DEFRA or call the APHA. They're the same thing, by the way. The APHA and DEFRA are essentially the same thing. But
okay.
if you just contact the government, speak to them, ask to speak to an advisor about what they currently recommend.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably call them August time
yep.
so that you're up to date. They're going to know more by that point. If you call them now, they're just going to tell you exactly what I've just told you.
Mm-hmm.
So call them in August, maybe September time, and just see what they say.
Brilliant. And all this talk of travel,
mm.
we're going to touch on our
nice
next...
Nice segue.
Oh,
I like
thank
it.
You.
I like it.
I mean, do I sound like a professional now?
Do you do this?
Oh, no. Please like and subscribe, guys.
That was less smooth, but I'll give it to you.
I don't know if you can actually do that on a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure you listen to the end.
Keep listening?
I know. I'm like promoting it like a YouTube video. Like and subscribe.
Like, comment, share.
So, using that rather non-smooth segue now, we're going to talk about travelling with pets, and sadly in the news we have this huge crisis with coronavirus. And as Rory was here before, I was like, can we talk about coronavirus? He was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Because he is hopefully going to put our mind at ease a little bit and hopefully expel some myths. So, over to you.
Yeah, so it's a massive concern to a lot of people. I mean, just, I suppose to start with, panic doesn't help anyone. The first myth I would like to debunk is surgical masks do not stop you from catching coronavirus.
Yes.
They might be a bit of a comfort blanket for you.
Right.
I've had people contacting me asking for surgical masks.
Oh, no. That's because they're £60 on Amazon
now. And
this
is the thing. I mean, people are making an absolute killing by selling rubbish masks that are essentially a piece of paper going over your face. It does not do anything.
Right.
Please don't fall into that trap. Number one, they stop working after 20 minutes, FYI.
Interesting.
So, and actually, there's hundreds of studies out there, even human surgical studies, that show that if a surgeon does not wear a hat or a mask, mm-hmm. there is absolutely no effect on mortality or morbidity in their patients.
Oh, wow.
There's no increased infection rates, there's nothing. So,
good to know.
In reality, they're just there for show.
Save your mask money, guys.
Right, mask money goes in your back pocket. Number two, we have recently seen reports of this POM in Hong Kong who has tested mild positive for COVID-19. Now, when I say COVID-19, that is the strain of coronavirus that is causing disease in humans at the moment. Newsblast, guys, coronavirus is everywhere.
And it's existed for a long time, hasn't it?
It has. Coronaviruses, there's the coronaviridae, which is the number of different coronaviruses out there. Now, it is estimated that cats in this country, almost 80% of them carry coronavirus.
Do not get rid of your cats.
No, don't. No, no. That does not mean you can get rid of your cats. It means that coronavirus really isn't that pathogenic. A lot of those cats will be completely asymptomatic. They won't know if they've got it. You won't know they've got it. A very, very, very small percentage of those cats then develop a nasty disease called FIP.
Right.
But that is due to a mutation in the virus, nothing to do with the fact that they're carrying coronavirus. So, number one, there are also dogs out there with coronavirus. There are a number of different strains that infect different species.
Okay.
Current studies and current reports are that COVID-19 does not cause disease in dogs, and there are absolutely no proven cases of COVID-19 where a human has caught it from a dog.
Brilliant.
That is the fact of the matter at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know because it's going to be a few weeks till this goes out, but in this current time, that is the fact. And no one should panic about their dog catching it. No one should panic about their dog dying from it. And no one should panic about catching it from a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as.
So there is no reason to be abandoning pets. No one should be freaking out. Nothing like that.
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
Perfect. Perfect. But in the height of everyone panic buying toilet paper and bread and rice, my co-op has no rice, should we have supplies at home just in case there is a shortage, in case cities are shut down, that kind of thing?
It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, I suppose if you're going to be someone who wants to prepare for the worst, then you've got to prepare for your dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have food for your dog. You've got to have things for your dog. I am not that person. I can hardly prepare for tomorrow, let alone like 3 weeks down the line. My girlfriend is the biggest hoarder on the planet.
Yep.
She doesn't listen to this, so it's fine. She won't hear. But she has, honestly, she's got like 17 boxes of cereal. It's ridiculous. And tins and tins and tins and tins of food. I think we could live for a year on what's in our store cupboards.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
I am a food hoarder. However, I don't cook at home. I'm always like, let's order in. And my partner, he's like, well, why don't we just cook at home? I'm like, no, we need that just in case. Let's go out and get something.
It's hilarious.
I'm ready for the apocalypse.
Right, I got down to the last box of shredded wheat the other week and Ree went, I'll go and buy two more. I'm like, no, stop, no more. No,
we're good. We've run out of space.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think, for me at least, I plan for the dogs more. I'm always like, if anything goes wrong, and this is training I had when I lived in New York during Hurricane Sandy, think shops were closed, you know, they expected mass flooding. Thankfully, where I was, it was fine. But people had to be evacuated. And you were told to have a go bag ready for your dogs. And I've always had that mentality in my head.
Nice.
I've worked in a lot of disaster zones, sadly, and helping with dogs. And it's like, right, you need to be ready just in case. Every certificate I have, all the dog's details, microchips, I have a little microchip scanner here.
Nice.
You know, in case I find some dogs on the street during the apocalypse. I'm prepared, guys. But sadly, Rory now knows where I live, so he knows where all the food is once the shreddies have run out.
I know where to go.
But for me, at least, I always have a few extra cans of dog food, just in case.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right?
If I'm sick, you know, I don't have to then schlep to the stores. I'm like, I've got that. I'm ready. If there is a shortage of food coming in from the EU... I've got everything. I've got all the food, guys. We're good.
Well, there we go. We all know it's a party at Kim's house.
But I think also, you know, as a responsible dog owner, you should have access to those things. You should know where your dog's microchip details are.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's nothing that makes me happier than when someone comes in with a vaccine card that's been sort of 8-9 years in the making, got all the stickers, got all the signatures, and they've got a record of the microchip number. They've got sort of old history and all that sort of, it's really nice to know that people organise and keep that. I mean, if you've got a dog, you should have a folder with those things in. I mean, we all have our own sort of, I mean, I've got a box at home, which has got all my sort of passport, my driving licence, all those important documents, my mortgage medical letters and that sort of stuff. And why you should also have one for your dog.
Yeah.
You really should. With their vaccine certificates, with their history, with relevant history. Mm-hmm. So anything big that you're going to need to know about,
allergies, and then
their microchip number as well, just so you've got it all.
I back it up also on Google Docs.
Sensible.
So I can access it from anywhere. So if I am traveling with the dogs, i.e., we're going up to Birmingham or Scotland or, you know, France or whatever, I can access that information if there are any problems at all. So if, for example, the vets in Paris asked me for the microchip details, boom, here you go, here's the last medication it was on, here's the flea worming course, that kind of thing. And then I also carry dog food with me at all times.
Of course you do.
Dog food and treats. I'm good to go. I've got it all stored under the spare bed here.
Nice. If you ever get mugged, they're gonna have a nice surprise, aren't they?
Actually, someone broke into my car recently.
Oh, wow.
And what was really sad is how they basically rejected everything because it's a car filled of dog paraphernalia. They're like, they pulled out all the dog crates, they went through all the bags at the back, dog shampoo, dog food, everything. And I got out in the morning and it was just all over the street. I mean, people walking past in central London didn't even want to steal it. They're like, that's obviously for the dog lady.
Nice.
So yeah, always prepared for every occasion.
But I suppose the side note here is don't panic about coronavirus. It is, yes, it's one of these things. It is less risky than the flu. It's just unfortunately another virus. It was going to happen at some point. And yes, there's going to be mass outbreak. And yes, loads of people are going to get it. And particularly in London, it's going to happen. I think there was a outbreak at Goldsmiths University recently. So it's going to happen. Just stay safe. Keep good hygiene. Mm-hmm. Don't let your dog go and lick a stranger. And then lick you. Because that's the only way I can actually think about them transmitting it to you. But yeah, other than that, just be sensible and keep good hygiene.
Yeah, and you know, if you're out and about and touching loads of strange dogs and the owner is obviously sick, just wash your hands.
Yeah, right, exactly. Carry hand sanitizer or wash your hands. And I mean, there's this hilarious thing from the health minister at the moment saying, wash your hands for 20 seconds. Can I suggest, even when there's not an outbreak, you wash your hands for 20 seconds.
Yes.
Just wash your hands. It's not hard.
It does concern me that most people don't know how to wash their hands.
Right. I wash my hands probably upwards of 25 times a day because of the job I do.
Yep.
But it just, come on, second nature. Just be hygienic, right?
Be clean, guys. Be clean.
Yeah. God, we've really digressed there. We've become a public service announcer.
I like it. We're good. This is promoted by the Ministry of Defence. No, it's not. It's not promoted by anyone. So, basically, travel information for the pet passport, August time, hopefully we'll have more of an update.
Yeah.
keep in touch with your vet. Your vet's going
to
know.
Your vet will tell you. And also, if you need to know, go on the government website. It's all the details are on there as well. If you just search for APHA dog travel, it'll be on there.
Perfect. Coronavirus. At the moment, there is absolutely no panic. There is no evidence at all that you can contract this from your dogs, that your dogs can be spreading it around. Pomeranian owners especially were panicked. Please don't panic, pom owners. I do actually sound like a broadcast. But it's 1942, and we are not panicking here. We're going to go out and grow some potatoes. But yeah, don't panic. Wash your hands, basically. Sensible. Rory's book announcement is going to be... We're doing a lot of time travel in this podcast.
I like it. We've gone backwards. I
know.
Like
we're going to be... I'll also announce it as soon as the official announcement has come out. And as soon as the book's out, we'll make sure we mention that as well.
Wonderful.
The book club members will also hopefully get an exclusive. So watch out for the City Dog Book Club. And hopefully we can get Rory back. If anyone has any other questions...
Yeah, I feel like... Fire questions in, and if we get enough, we can do like a bit of a quick fire question and answer,
like
answer everyone's questions style podcast.
Or if you run out of plants.
Or that.
Or you're welcome to come back.
Wonderful. Sounds good to me.
All right, guys. This has been the City Dogs podcast with Rory the Vet. Thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. And on social, it's all at Rory the Vet.
It is indeed.
Go follow, guys. Take care. Bye.